today, because it's Sanctity of Life Sunday, I won't be preaching a regular type sermon where we go, you know, through the verses and look at the details of a particular verse or a particular passage. We'll be looking at a topic, and that topic has to do with the right to life or the objections that we would have to abortion. I'm very happy to say that we now live in a post-Roe v. Wade world. In 2022, the Supreme Court, in its Dobbs decision, struck down Roe v. Wade completely, found that it was a bad decision when it was made in 1973, and handed the decision for abortion back to the individual states. A recent study suggested that about 30,000 babies have been born since that time who otherwise probably would have been aborted. Wisconsin has had a law on its books since 1849, over 170 years now. Roe v. Wade annulled that law that protected human life in the womb. But after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, the practice of abortion became illegal in Wisconsin for about 15 months or so. Well, sadly, Josh Call, the attorney general here in Wisconsin, filed a lawsuit disputing the enforceability of that old 1849 law. He has said, in fact, that he will not enforce that law. He will not prosecute those who violate that old law. And then a judge, I think a judge down in Madison, put together a ruling that said that the 1849 law does not disallow or outlaw abortion. And when that judge came down with that decision, here's what Josh Call said. He said, "Freedom wins, equality wins, women's health wins. This ruling is a momentous victory, and we are prepared to defend it and to defend reproductive freedom in Wisconsin." That's what Josh Call and those like him call abortion, reproductive freedom. They call the taking of innocent human life, the murder of little babies in the womb, he calls that reproductive rights, and he is very, very happy that now women have the right, once again in Wisconsin, to murder their pre-born babies. In fact, I read that about 1,500 babies who otherwise would have been aborted were not aborted. They were allowed to live because of that 15-month period where abortion was illegal in Wisconsin. Well, that's now been changed because the Attorney General, Call, has decided not to enforce the 1849 laws. The abortion providers once again resumed their bloody and brutal business as of September of 2023. According to one report that I read, people were lined up immediately after that decision from the judge saying that they could once again do abortions. They were lined up to fill in their appointments for abortion within 24 hours of that court ruling. They were very excited to get back into that abortion business as soon as they could. It seems likely that the Supreme Court of Wisconsin will once again make a ruling on the issue, and most people think that they will make the ruling that will allow abortion once again. They'll overturn that 1849 law and make abortion legal and allowable in Wisconsin once again. Remember that the Supreme Court now has a 4-3 liberal majority on the court, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin. And the lady who switched the court from conservative to liberal, a lady named Janet Protasiewicz, campaigned on her commitment to abortion rights. She let everybody know that she was in favor of abortion rights, and if she got on the court, she would try to change the Wisconsin law. Right now, Wisconsin has a ban on abortions after 20 weeks of gestation. The Wisconsin Republicans recently introduced a bill that would ban abortions after 14 weeks. But most people think that Governor Evers will certainly veto that bill. There's another group, like the Wisconsin Family Council, who is trying to go through the court rulings or through the court system to make sure that that 1849 law stands. If that 1849 law stands, then that would effectively outlaw abortions in Wisconsin. So there are some right-to-life people who want a 14-week ban. There are some who want to enforce that 1849 law. And they're a little bit at odds with one another. The people like Wisconsin Family Council, they want to make that court case to go through the court system to see if the court will find that that 1849 law needs to stand, which would allow outlaw abortion. So it remains to be seen what will happen with that. But it does seem like the majority of citizens in Wisconsin approve of abortion. You know, Governor Evers campaigned on the fact that he was in favor of abortion rights. Same with Josh Call, same with this lady who's on the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, and they were voted into office. And so people here in Wisconsin seem to be in favor of abortion rights for the most part. It's very sad to know that many people in our state favor abortion. And it's very sad to hear people like Josh Call rejoicing over the fact that abortion is once again going to be legal in the state of Wisconsin. I've spoken in the past about the biblical basis for the sanctity of human life and about the specific reasons, scientific reasons even, showing that life begins at conception. Both biblically and scientifically, the truth is obvious, and that is that a human is a human, no matter how small. From the very point of conception all the way through natural death, that human is valuable and should be protected. Abortion is a great evil that we should strongly oppose because, really, it's just another form of murder. And my understanding is that since 1973, when the Roe v. Wade abortion ruling came down, about 65 million babies here in the United States have been aborted. It's just amazing. Well, we could ask the question, why are these women choosing abortion? Of course, there's many reasons for that. Today, I want to look at one of the most common reasons, the reasons that often people give as to why they have a right to terminate the life of their babies. And this common idea is that personal bodily autonomy, that is personal freedom, is the greatest and the highest value, and that people ought to have the right to do whatever they want with their own body. You've heard that expression, my body, my choice. So if it's your own body and you have the right to do whatever you want with your body, well, then you should have the freedom to do whatever you want. And that is called bodily autonomy. Well, I believe that bodily autonomy is not the greatest good. It's not the highest value. And in many cases, the pursuit of bodily autonomy results in great evil, great pain, great abuse, and of course, death for many millions of people. Abortion is a primary example of how bodily autonomy can be a very bad thing given certain circumstances. So today I'd like to talk about that idea of bodily autonomy and why it's not the highest and the greatest good and why people who hold that view of bodily autonomy often do very many bad, evil, wicked things. So what is bodily autonomy? Bodily autonomy is essentially the idea that I can do whatever I want with my body. I mean, within limits, and of course they would say maybe within the law, whatever compulsions I might have, whatever feelings I might have, whatever instincts I might have, I have to be free to do whatever I feel like I want to do. Some people have called it hyper-individualism or expressive individualism. I heard it called recently hedonistic utilitarianism. That's a good one for you. You can look that one up. Hedonism, of course, is the pursuit of pleasure. Utilitarianism, whatever works. Whatever works to give you pleasure, you've got to pursue that. Whatever you might think you might want to do. And we see in our society people doing all sorts of depraved, wicked, evil things, basically because they have a desire for that. Whatever the desire is, you must follow your desires, your instincts, your appetites. That's what this is all about. Another writer mentioned the same idea in the terms of unleashing of the instincts. You know, we all have instincts, we all have appetites, we all have desires, but most of us recognize that many of those desires are evil and wicked, and we have to put a leash on our desires. We have to put a leash on our instincts. We have to control ourselves. Well, the unleashing of the desires, the unleashing of the instincts is to say, nope, no taboos, no restrictions. I'm just going to do whatever I feel like doing. And there are many people who hold that as the highest value in life. Whatever you want to call it, the idea is the same. Life is all about me, making myself happy. I am the center of the universe. I want to do what I want to do. And nobody should restrict me. Whatever my feelings are, whatever my appetites, whatever instincts or compulsions I might have, no matter how depraved and debased anybody might think they are, I have to be free to do them. And not only do them, but do them publicly. Nobody better stand in judgment of what I want to do. If I want to dress up like a little dog and pretend that I'm a dog or pretend that I'm the opposite sex, you better let me do that. You better leave me alone to pursue whatever ideas, whatever circumstances, whatever behaviors that I want to do. Don't judge me for doing the things that I feel like I want to do. That's essentially bodily autonomy. And it's really a very self-centered view of life. I'll give you a quote here from a kind of a Hollywood starlet person. This, I think I've mentioned this quote before, but I think it really nails this idea of self-centeredness and doing whatever I feel like doing. This is what this woman, a Hollywood starlet type person, says. For so long, I did what made others happy. I think for the last 2 years, I decided I'm going to make myself happy. And that feels really good. I think it's important to be honest with yourself about what really makes you happy. I've chosen myself. I think it's okay to choose yourself. My 40s are all about being team me. I'm going to eat well. I'm going to work out. I'm going to have more fun, spend more time with my kids and the people who make me happy. There it is. Life is all about making me happy. That's bodily autonomy. That means that I'm free. I should be free. I must be free. I demand the freedom to do whatever I want to do. And you better not try to restrict me. That's essentially bodily autonomy. And so individual happiness then is the highest good. What do I pursue? What's the meaning of life? Happiness. Just doing what I feel is going to make me the happiest. So in order to enjoy bodily autonomy, I need to enjoy pleasure and avoid pain. That's the hedonistic idea, the hedonistic utilitarianism. Whatever I feel like I want to do, whatever is going to bring me the most joy, the most satisfaction, the most pleasure, I must be free to do that. I must be free to pursue my desires. No matter where that leads, no matter what the results, I have to have the freedom, as the Disney movies tell me, to follow my heart. My heart, my feelings, my emotions, my compulsions, whatever I think of myself internally. It doesn't matter what my body says, my external body says certain things about me, who I am. That doesn't matter at all. Only thing that matters is my feelings about myself. And I can then transform myself into anything that I want to be. And if there's anything that causes me pain or inconvenience, I must be able, I demand the freedom to get rid of it or to change it. And, of course, that pertains to abortion in the sense of if a woman, or if I, let's say you're a woman, if I happen to be participating in certain behaviors and I happen to get pregnant, well, if I don't want that baby, then guess what? If that baby is promising any kind of pain or inconvenience or cost, if it's something that I don't want, if it doesn't bring me pleasure, then guess what I have to do? I have to have the freedom to abort that baby because bodily autonomy. That's the highest good. The best thing that you can have in life is freedom to do whatsoever you want to at any time. And so without that freedom, I'm not going to be happy. I have to abort that child because that child is going to be a cost. It's going to be an inconvenience. It's not going to make me happy. So I have to have the freedom to abort that child. Well, for most of human history, at least in Western civilization, there were laws against certain behaviors that the majority saw as not in the best interest of the civilization. In other words, you are not free to do just whatever you wanted to do. There were laws against various forms of fornication. There were laws against forms of adultery. There were laws against polygamy and homosexuality and abortion. There were laws against abortion because people felt, the majority of the people felt, that this was a bad thing for society. This was not something that is going to benefit society in general. Here's a quote from one writer. She says, "The consistent condemnation of abortion, deriving from the recognition that all life ultimately has its source in God the Creator, eradicated legal toleration and social approval of abortion and infanticide in Christian nations, greatly reduced their incidence, and pushed both to the shadowy corners of human behavior where unsanctioned and shameful activities occur." Okay, if we're all honest about ourselves, we know that shameful and unsanctioned and illegal activities occur in human life. There's no doubt about it that humans act in ways that are depraved and debauched and wicked. However, generally speaking, in Western civilization, that kind of activity was pushed to the margins. Why do you think that homosexual people talk about coming out of the closet? Well, it's because that kind of behavior was pushed into the closet. The people in charge, the people who are the leaders of Western civilization, they knew that that kind of behavior is going on, but they didn't want it to be public. They wanted it to stay private. In fact, they didn't want to even think about it. It had to be pushed to the margins of society. Well, people today are no longer happy with that. They don't want it to be in the margins, and so they want to bring it out in front of everybody else. So previously in Western civilization, people thought, let's push it to the margins. Let's not have that kind of thing out in public. In fact, let's promote the good, the beautiful, and the true. Let's promote things that are promoting human flourishing. Let's do things that will actually be beneficial for society and for people. People accepted a traditional sense of order and responsibility. People thought in terms of doing what was best, what was good for human flourishing. And that led to laws restricting most of this objectionable and evil kinds of human behavior. Most everyone agreed that restricting evil, shameful, debauched, debased behavior was a good thing. People did that kind of thing, but it should be restricted. There were laws. There were laws against homosexuality right up until the early 1980s in some states. There were laws against abortion, obviously, until quite recently. There were laws against adultery. There were even laws against easy divorce. Divorce became much easier just over the course of the last half century or so. There were laws that were restricting human behavior, human freedom, if you want to call it that, because there has to be restrictions on the evil intent of the human heart. As a result of the moral revolution beginning in the 1960s, most of those laws restricting destructive behavior have been overturned. The majority of citizens wanted fewer restrictions on their behavior. They were tired of biblical morality being forced down their throats. Most of these people are no longer Christians. You know, there was a great Christian emphasis. Many, many people claim to be Christians in the United States. That has largely changed. And so since people no longer claim to be Christians, they don't care about Christian morality. They don't care about biblical morality anymore. They don't want that to be forced upon them. So what they've done is they've been successful in changing these laws, all the laws that restricted behavior regarding homosexuality or abortion, of course, or adultery. All these kinds of things, many of these things, have been changed over the course of the last 50 to 75 years. So they changed these laws. They came out of the closet. They've come out of the shadowy corners. We can no longer restrict the LGBT movement to the shadowy corners. They've come out since the 1960s. And now, I forget all their statements, you know, we're here, we're queer, you have to deal with it. You know, now we're going to be out in front. Now we're going to be on virtually every TV show. Every prime time event that you see in the media, there's got to be homosexuals there. There's got to be perversion of some sort. There's got to be reflected in the culture because of diversity and inclusion and all these kinds of things, equity. All these things have to pertain today because that's the society in which we live. Today, the most widely acceptable moral imperative is do your own thing. No longer do we have imperatives regarding moral behavior. Now we are told, we are demanded, it's demanded of us that we do whatever we feel like doing all the time. Everyone must be free to engage in whatever behavior provides the most pleasure and the least pain. Whatever you feel on the inside, you must express that externally. You must be authentic. That's a big word these days. Be authentic to yourself. Whatever you feel on the inside, you must live on the outside. If you are a man but you have feminine feelings, well, then you must act those out. If you're a woman and you have masculine feelings, you must act those out. Don't repress yourself. You must express yourself. You must do what you feel like on the inside. Do your own thing. Express yourself. Follow your heart. And if people are going to be free to indulge their desires for pleasure without consequences, well, then it means that women must have the freedom of being not pregnant. They must have the access to abortion. If women are going to enjoy the freedom from reproductive responsibility, that means they must have the option of being not pregnant. After all, men can follow the appetites of their own desires. They can follow their instincts and not be pregnant. And so for a woman to be equal with a woman has to have the right not to be pregnant. And so how does that happen? Well, there are ways, of course, of preventing pregnancy, but if the woman gets pregnant, and if she doesn't want to be pregnant, she must be free from that pregnancy. That's what is demanded today from feminism, from our society. Well, that kind of freedom for women was not even possible until recently. Now, I'm talking within the last about 100 years or so. Reproductive freedom was not even a thing that women could have because it was not available. Medical technology has developed fairly recently to provide ways and means of women avoiding pregnancy. And if they do get pregnant, they can deal with that pregnancy. In other words, they can terminate it. They can kill the child very quickly and easily. They can go to an institution. They can go to a building. They can go to Planned Parenthood or something like that. And they can be rid of that baby. They can have that baby removed and killed quite easily. So today, when you look at the medical technology and the reduction, or really the elimination, of biblical morality, then you have the ability for people to do whatever they please to do. Love thy neighbor is not a high value for our secular world. Caring for the least of these, caring for the orphan and the widow, that's not a big problem. That's not even a concern for most people in society today. God is just a myth for so many people. And so there's no higher reason. What would be the higher value than self if there is no God? If all we are is a bunch of molecules in motion, if we're all just a bunch of animals, well, then our instinct is all that's really important. The only thing that's really important is doing what I feel like I want to do. Seize the day. You know, you only go around once. You may as well grab all the gusto, as that old beer commercial used to say. So then the highest value is just doing what you want to do. The highest value is achieving your own goals. And if that child is in the way, it must be eliminated. So over the course of time, you know, earlier in Western civilization, concern about God and what God wanted was the primary thing. What does God want of me? I'm under biblical morality. I recognize that there is a God. I'm not God. I'm the creation. And so I have to concern myself with what God wants. Well, all of that has reversed now. Over the course of time, things have reversed from concern about God to much more concern about man. Instead of submitting ourselves to God's will and his purposes for life, people today are concerned only about their own desires, their appetites, and their instincts. The object of highest concern is not God anymore for most people. Now it is the self. Somebody put it this way: divinely ordained moral codes increasingly appear to be options rather than truth handed down from on high. Instead of being the standard by which we would be judged, such moral codes were alternatives that we judge according to how well they accorded with our ambitions and desires. Okay, the only thing that's important is our own ambitions and desires. If God's word and God's moral limitations don't suit us, well, then we have to get rid of them. We don't like to be under humans. I'm speaking about unsaved people. They don't want to be under the domination of biblical morality. And so they say, it doesn't accord with my desires, and so I'm just going to get rid of it. So if a woman has bodily autonomy, it means that she has the freedom to decide what happens to her own body. She's not accountable to God, and the law has removed most of those limitations and boundaries. Society now demands that every woman must be free to indulge in whatever behaviors that she wants to indulge in. She must be free from the consequences of that behavior. She must be free to pursue whatever pleases her and avoid whatever causes pain, discomfort, or inconvenience. So there's no restrictions, no taboos, nothing that's truly depraved or out of limits. Everything is possible. Everything is allowable today for women. In fact, society now promotes bodily autonomy in the sense that women should explore all their options that are available, including homosexuality, including virtually any kind of depraved behavior you can consider. They say that women ought to be free to explore all those options and have no restrictions. And, of course, if pregnancy occurs, well, you just abort the child. So that is what bodily autonomy demands of us today. Now, why is bodily autonomy good? Obviously, we would say that a degree, there is a sense in which bodily autonomy is a good thing. We should want to enjoy the maximum freedom that we can. We should value freedom. That is, after all, a biblical concept. It's a high value in Western civilization. Nobody wants to be enslaved. Nobody wants unnecessary limitations on their behavior. That's true. But freedom must end at the point where it hurts others. So if I'm waving around my arms or I'm dancing around or something like that, I'm free to do that until my fist comes in contact with your nose. And then you might object to my freedom. So sure, we have freedom to do what we want, but when it hurts others, well, then we have to be restricted. And obviously, abortion hurts other people. True freedom has guide rails. I like to think of freedom almost like a train on its tracks. Okay, a train is free to go here and there, come and go, but it has to stay on the tracks. What happens when a train gets off its tracks? It derails and it's not going anywhere. How are cars and airplanes able to move about and travel from place to place? Because there are rules. There are rules of the road. There are rules of the skies. And if everybody keeps the rules, if everybody follows the guidelines, then everything works. But as soon as people start saying, no, these guidelines don't pertain to me, and I'm going to do whatever I feel like doing, then you have a lot of problems. So we have freedom, but there's got to be restrictions. There's got to be guidelines. There's got to be a track laid down on which we can go from place to place and be free. So the big question then is, who gets to set the rules? Who gets to set the rules of the road? Who gets to set the rules of the sky? Who gets to set the rules for trains? Who gets to set the rules for human life? Somebody would say, some people, secularists or evolutionists, you know, atheists, they would say, there are no rules. No rules. Just do whatever you feel like doing. For Western civilization, the Bible and Christianity provided the rails for the railroad. How can the train go? Well, it's got to have rails, and Christianity set those rails, essentially. Christianity set the guidelines. People knew who they were and what they were supposed to do based on biblical morality. It doesn't necessarily mean, certainly not, that everybody did what they should do, but there was a commonly held objective standard. Here's who God is. We know that God exists, and God has said he's established rules for human life. And life works best if we acknowledge God's rules. There were some, obviously many, many people who don't follow God's rules perfectly, but everybody recognized in Western civilization that the best thing for human society is for people to follow biblical morality. People more or less agreed on that. Western civilization essentially is a combination of biblical morality and ideas and thoughts from the Greek philosophers. So, you know, you got these two ideas and put them together and you have Western civilization. And that's pertained now for nearly 2,000 years. And in many respects, it's worked out pretty well. Well, sadly, that began to change in the, well, really going all the way back to the 1700s with the arrival of the Enlightenment, when leading thinkers began teaching that we should center everything on human happiness and desire rather than on God's will. And so if God does not exist, well, then we have to come up with our own rules. God doesn't lay down the tracks. We have to lay down the tracks for ourselves. Perhaps human happiness is found, they said, not in serving God, but in serving the self. And so these ideas began percolating through the society, and then, of course, come the 1960s, and following that, Western civilization in general began a radical project to dethrone God and to dispense with his influence over public life. And so if God is no longer the one in charge, if he's not the influence, it means that each individual then makes up his own rules. What is the meaning and purpose of life? Well, I don't know. I guess have fun. Enjoy your life. Be happy. How do you define happiness? Oh, I don't know, whatever you want to do. Happiness is achieving your own goals. Happiness is following your instincts. Happiness is doing whatever you feel like you want to do. Happiness is not, you know, the blessed man of the scriptures. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. That doesn't pertain anymore. People don't care about the blessed man from the Bible. All they care about is doing their own thing, achieving their own goals, fulfilling their own instincts. So happiness then is doing whatever you want to do, enjoying bodily autonomy. So people don't find interest in God's will or following him. Whatever brings me pleasure, that's the highest thing for the modern secular person. Today, the quest for bodily autonomy demands that each individual makes his own rules. Every person has to be free to indulge whatever appetites and desires he has. So we no longer submit to God on those issues. What is the good, the beautiful, and the true? I mean, under Western civilization, there's a definition. What is good? Well, it's what God says is good. What is beautiful? It follows objective definitions of what is beautiful. What is true? Thy word is truth, God says. So we have standards. We have ideas. We have knowledge. We have an anchor to be like a foundation for life because God tells us all this. Well, if you wipe out God, you wipe out his word, how do you define what's good? How do you define what's beautiful? How do you define what's true? You have your truth, which might contradict my truth. Beauty, you know, talk about modern art. Throw some paint against the wall and see what sticks. Oh, that's beautiful. What is good? Huh? Whatever you want to do, whatever you think is good, however you define it. What's a woman? However you want to define it. Whatever you think. So there's no standards, there's no foundation, there's no anchor for life. It's just whatever anybody wants to do. That leads to anarchy. It leads to no restrictions whatsoever. It leads to failure. It leads to chaos. So the real issue here is a battle between God's authority and human authority. It goes right back to the Garden of Eden, after all, when Satan comes along and says, "Thou shalt not surely die." God says this, and Satan and humans say, "I don't care what God says, I'm going to do my own thing." So it's a battle that's been going on since creation between humans and God. Conservative Christians generally agree that the highest good is to bring glory and honor to God. God is the source, the meaning, and the goal of all things. We find ultimate meaning in loving God and loving our neighbor. Jesus said the highest, first thing, the most important rule is to love God. And the second commandment is likened to it, love thy neighbor as thyself. Well, many today say the very opposite. They would say the highest good is to please yourself, to do whatever you want. If there is no God, well, then there's no reason to try to find out what God's will is for your life. You find meaning and purpose for yourself. Since we're all just a bunch of animals, we're just a mass of molecules in motion, well, then nobody has the right to tell me what to do. Who are you as an animal, as just a result of blind evolutionary forces? Who are you to tell me what I should do? Everybody then comes up with his own morality, his own way of doing things, his own life, his own restrictions, or lack of them. The highest good, then, is the freedom to do whatever you want, the freedom to follow your heart. From a Christian point of view, bodily autonomy is good when it is limited by biblical truth. Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall do what? Set you free." So freedom has to be informed by truth. You'll know the truth, and that's what gives you freedom. Freedom has to be limited by God's truth. But from a secular point of view, there cannot be any restrictions. We must allow nothing to get in the way of personal desire. So, with that bodily autonomy point of view, if a woman becomes pregnant and doesn't want her baby for any reason, she must be free to terminate the life of that little baby. That's bodily autonomy. Now, why is bodily autonomy not the greatest good? Anybody from a Christian point of view should recognize that simply pursuing your own instincts and appetites is not the greatest good. Non-Christians may claim personal freedom is the greatest good, but really, without God, all claims about what ought to be are simply opinions. Okay, when we say, "Thus saith the Lord," we are anchoring that truth in the truth of God's word. We're saying that's an objective truth. Thou shalt not lie. Thou shalt not steal. These are objective moral standards. They come from the fact that God is our creator and he's made the universe in a certain way to show that this is wrongful, illegal, sinful activity. Well, once you remove God from the scene, there's no ought to life anymore. We're just like lions and zebras, and we're just like a bunch of animals doing what animals do. So there cannot be any kind of oughtness. There cannot be any moral imperative then to life, because we're all just a bunch of, we're a mass of molecules in motion, and that's all we are. So anybody's idea then of what we should or should not do becomes opinion. It's all just opinion. And so one opinion is just as good as anybody else's opinion. So if we all just have opinions, how can we come to a place where the society says this is what we ought to do? It comes down to force. Who has the power? And right now, for example, a good example of that, I think, is how the government is trying to force the LGBT movement down on society. It's not that society is accepting it. It's that the government, given its power, is trying to cram that down everybody's throat. Well, they can do that if all we have is opinion, and if one opinion is as good as anybody else's, and there's no objective standards to go by, well, then whoever has the power has the right to enforce their own opinion. It's nothing more than that. Well, from the Christian point of view, personal freedom certainly is a great good, but it's not the greatest or the highest good. The highest good is not bodily autonomy, just doing whatever you feel like doing with your body. That's not what gives life purpose and meaning. That's not what provides happiness or success. In fact, what do we know is true if we follow our inner evil compulsions? What do we know about the human heart? The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. The Bible talks about our evil inclinations, our vile affections. And if you follow your vile affections, what's going to be the result? Disaster. Galatians 6, 7, and 8. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. Whatever man sows, that shall he also reap. And so if we lead that kind of a lifestyle of total seeking of pleasure and self-indulgence, what's going to be the result? It will be chaos. It will be disaster. And so what does the Bible say about the chief end of man? If it's not bodily autonomy and just doing whatever we feel like doing, what is our goal? What is the purpose of human life? Well, we know these verses, Ecclesiastes 12:13. Let's hear the end of the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. What is human life all about? What are we supposed to be doing here? What's the goal? Fear God and keep his commandments. 1 Corinthians 10:31, therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. That's a very clearly known one. 1 Peter 4:11, that God in all things may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom be praise and dominion forever and ever. So the highest goal for the entire universe, and especially for believers, is to bring glory and honor to God. That's the main thing that we're trying to do. Really, there is no greater goal. So if that's true, then we have to consider, what does God say about the value of children? We're not free just to make up our own rules about these things. We're not free to just come up with our own moral standards. We have moral standards that we subscribe to that are given to us by God. God's the creator. He has the right to tell us what to do, and we simply submit to the moral standards that God has given us. So what is the value of a human being? We just read that portion from Psalm 139. We're fearfully and wonderfully made. Genesis tells us we're made in the image of God. So we have value, we have purpose, we have worth. We're worthwhile individuals. If you're a human, you have human value and dignity simply on the basis of the fact that you're made in God's image. Well, if there is no God and if the Bible is not true, there's none of that. We don't have value any more than any other animal. We're just like a blade of grass or like a rat or a dog. There's no particular value in humans. So if that's the case, what's the big deal about murdering a few of them or millions of them? Murder would not be a sin if there is no God. A very famous writer, and I've quoted him multiple times, if there is no God, then everything is permitted. How can you restrict anything? If there is no God, then do whatever you feel like doing, and that's bodily autonomy. That's exactly where a large portion of our society is today. There is no God, or at least I don't know if there's a God, and thus I'm free to do whatever I want to do. So we don't believe that. We believe that the highest concern is to know and honor God and to live a life that would be pleasing in his sight. In terms of bodily autonomy, we believe that the baby's right to life has more value than the mother's desire not to have that baby. Once that woman is pregnant, that human life has value, and it's greater value than the woman's right or desire not to have it. See, bodily autonomy, from the secular point of view, says, nope, once that baby is, you know, existing, it's the mother's right to terminate that life because that woman has bodily autonomy. And we would directly disagree with that by saying, nope, the life of that baby has more value than the woman's desire not to have that baby. That baby, even though it's within the mother's body, is an individual human being with its own set of rights. In fact, I saw a headline, I guess I didn't read the article, but the headline that I saw the other day is something to the effect, woman dies in car accident, unborn baby survives. If there's not a distinction between the mother and the baby, how can the woman die in the accident and the unborn baby survive? Well, it's because that baby had come to the place in the term, in its gestation, where it could survive outside the womb. And these days, about 22 weeks is all that's necessary for that baby to be viable outside the womb. And so when that woman tragically died in that accident, her fetus, her baby, survived because it was viable outside of the womb. So clearly, the baby in the womb is not the same as the body of the mother. So when these people, these feminists, these people cry out, you know, my body, my choice, well, we agree to that to a certain degree. Okay, it's your body. You can do what you want with your body within the laws. But what about the body of that little baby that's in your womb? That's not your body. It might be dependent upon you right now. But in fact, that baby, even after it's born, it's still going to be dependent for many years to come. So it's just a matter of maturity. It's just a matter of where that baby is located. I mean, to say that we can kill that baby once it's outside the womb, it's just a matter of location. I mean, why can you kill it inside the womb but not outside the womb? Okay, there's so many things like that that make it clear that this is not, people are not thinking rationally about these things. The greatest good beyond glorifying and loving God is to love our neighbor. so that we have to treat people with dignity and respect, even those who are the weakest and the most vulnerable among us. Abortion advocates loudly claim that bodily autonomy is the greatest good, that women should have the right, they demand the right to kill their babies if they want to. Abortion, they say, is a good thing. Reproductive freedom is an unalienable human right. Where have you heard that lately? Kamala Harris, the vice president of the United States, is out on a mission. She's out on a campaign. She's traveling all over the place promoting abortion rights. Why do you think she wants to do that? Well, they're making it a big election issue because many people are concerned that people like the Republicans or whoever the Republican candidate is going to be, they might restrict abortion rights. And they probably would. And guess what? People don't want their rights restricted. Why? Bodily autonomy. I must have the freedom to do whatever I want to do, including kill my baby if that's what I want to do. That's what people demand today. And that's what Kamala Harris is sort of, she's trying to show that she believes in all those people. She believes along with those people who believe in the importance of bodily rights. She calls it, in fact, she says that abortion is a fundamental freedom. I'd like to know where that fundamental freedom is in our Constitution. You know, the Constitution gives us our fundamental freedoms under God. And yet she says that abortion is a fundamental freedom. Well, you'd think that the founders would have mentioned that if it really were. Well, obviously, we could not disagree more strongly with that opinion. Bodily autonomy is not the highest good. Abortion is an unmitigated evil. It's nothing less than murderous, vicious brutality. Once a woman becomes pregnant, that developing baby is far more valuable than the desire of the mother not to have that baby. The only thing potentially more valuable than the life of the baby is the life of the mother. The only thing that would make it possibly ethical to take the life of the baby would be if the life of the baby, the birth of that baby, causes directly the death of the mother. Now, the thing is that really does not happen very often. In fact, I recently heard a statement that said with modern medicine and medical technology, there are very few cases in which the baby must be killed to preserve the life of the mother. That happens in very rare cases. And so for the abortion rights people to say, well, there's got to be abortion in case of, you know, in case of the life of the mother, that's a situation that is incredibly rare, especially in Western civilization with modern medicine. That kind of thing, frankly, just does not happen very much at all. So that excuse for abortion is really meaningless. Bodily autonomy ends at the point at which it harms another human being. And that unborn baby is another human being. There's no doubt about that. You can have personal freedom to the degree that it doesn't harm anybody else. And abortion certainly does harm somebody else. In fact, that's the whole point of abortion, is to harm somebody else to the point of taking that individual's life. Well, many of the leading voices in our declining culture want us to believe that bodily autonomy is the height of achievement, the greatest good, the source of all happiness and fulfillment. But that is a lie from the pit of hell. It's just like Satan saying, "You shall not surely die. You shall become as gods." That's the same kind of a lie. If there is no God, and if we're nothing more than masses of molecules in motion, well, then perhaps there's nothing greater than seeking one's own desires. If there is no God, then murdering another human is certainly not sin. If God does not exist, as I said, then everything is permitted. Then there can be no rules restricting our behaviors. But if God does exist, then our perspective changes radically. Our primary desire becomes then pleasing God, not pleasing ourselves. Bodily autonomy is an important freedom to have, but it has restrictions. There are rules that we have to recognize. Our object and goal is not simply enjoying or fulfilling our appetites and our instincts. Our object and goal is to be acceptable in God's sight. We can enjoy freedom within certain God-ordained limits, and within those limits we enjoy happiness, contentment, and joy, but outside those limits is destruction, misery, and pain. I find it exceedingly sad that so many people in our world today reject a biblical Christian viewpoint on these issues. So many people today are driven by little more than appetite and personal desire. If an unborn child is inconvenient or unwanted, people feel like they have the right to murder it. That murder then, of course, allows them to enjoy their life. So many of these people, they talk about the fact that now they can enjoy their life, they can have their achievements, they can do what they really want to do now that they've murdered their baby. And they do that maybe multiple times in an effort to enjoy themselves or enjoy the pleasure that otherwise they wouldn't have. They're free to enjoy life, which after all is the purpose, they say, of existence, to be happy, to indulge your desires, to do whatever you want to do without dealing with the consequences. And that's where many people, sadly, in our world are today. But Christians must think differently about these issues. Bodily autonomy, to a certain degree, and within limits, is good. We want to enjoy maximum freedom. We recognize that. But our Creator has imposed certain limits on our freedom, and it's in our best interest, it's in society's best interest, to follow these limitations and restrictions and live within them. It's in humanity's best interest to value children and to protect them both before and after they are born. No amount of bodily autonomy surpasses the value of the human life, a child, whether it's born or unborn. We should be far more concerned about human life than we are about bodily autonomy. When the desire for bodily autonomy conflicts with the value of human life, we must protect and preserve life. Well, let's close in prayer.